part of the game is when you're out there struggling. And I think that happens with pitchers and hitters. And I also think the tough thing about hitting is that those guys are out there day after day after day. And it's got to dwell on your thoughts when you've gone 0 for 12. Now, when is that first hit going to come? And isn't it amazing, too, that a guy can hit the ball off his fist and it falls in for a base hit, and now he's out of his slump. Mm-hmm. But he can hit the ball hard 12 times and right at somebody. That's the wonderful thing about our game of baseball.
Warren, after the 48 season, what did you do in the off season?
Worked.
Well, tell us about that, because people today or down the road won't understand that in your generation, ball players didn't make enough money so that they could
That's right. Well, I think that's where the cattle ranch helped me. I used to throw bales of hay around daily. I used to feed the cattle. I used to build fences, get my hands and face dirty.
Were you aware that you were doing that to stay in shape? I mean, was that part of your regimen to stay physically fit, or was it just an accident?
I don't think it was any of those things. I think it was just nervous energy. Mm-hmm. No, I was a city boy that decided I was going to be a cattle rancher, and I had learned what a cattle rancher had to do. And
did you ever run in the off season?
No, I hated running.
Did you throw at all?
No.
So you really took the off season off. It was really off.
Well, as far as baseball is concerned.
Yeah.
And I remember management and coaches used to get mad at me because I used to throw his ball as hard the first day of spring training as I did when the season was over.
I can
understand.
Because
God gave me that kind of an arm. And it just felt good to throw the ball hard. And
you were really ready to go almost from the first day in spring training.
Well, I'd like to think so. Well, I think getting in condition as far as innings, one of the toughest things with a pitcher is the time between when you finish one inning and sit on the bench. Now you go out there and pick up where you left off. And that's recuperative power that I think a pitcher needs. So, there's a lot of facets. And God gave me an arm where I could pick up the ball and throw it and never have any bad results, and I think that my dad taught me the good fundamentals of rhythm so that I was able to maintain that rhythm. So a lot of factors.
Now, Warren, you become a very successful major league pitcher, and let's say the end of 48 or those years, you go in to talk contract. Tell us a little bit about what it was like to talk money in those years with an owner.
Let me tell you something. I came up to the big leagues for $250 a month, glad to get it. And I had to fight for every penny I ever got. And John Quinn wasn't the most generous guy in the world. And I remember John McHale, after I'd pitched 20 years in the big leagues, made a public statement that I'd earned $1 million in my career. Well, guys look good in the lobby and get that as a signing bonus now.
Yeah.
But John Quinn and I ran out of things to talk about. And I remember I'd won 25 years in a row, and I went up to see John Quinn and said, I think I deserve a raise. And he told me all the reasons why I shouldn't get a raise. And we got to the point where we'd write a number on a piece of paper and slide it across the table, and then he'd scratch it out and put, that's where our contest went.
And can you explain that to the people 75 years from now? You had no ability to just not sign with that team and be a free agent ever. The way baseball worked in your generation, you were indentured to one team, and you had no flexibility whatsoever.
Hey, look, one year I was holding out, and Bertie Tebbets was the manager, and he called me at home, and Bertie liked to think that he was a psychologist, and he said, well, we're going to miss you. In other words, go ahead, stay home. We're not going to sign you. And Bertie was the manager, and I said, how come you're intervening in place of the general manager in my negotiations. And he says, well, it's my ball club, you know. And anyway, doesn't matter. But we had no bargaining power, Faye. We weren't allowed to have an agent.
What was your highest salary in the whole baseball career? $100,000 toward the end?
No, I made $87,500. That's the highest I made. I wanted $100,000. I couldn't get it. And but then John Quinn, you know, I don't remember what he offered me, and but he negotiated to split the difference with me. That's why that $87,500 was there. And then I talked to Donald Davidson after Donald went to Houston. And Donald was suffering from brain cancer or whatever. And Donald told me that he never made more than like $15,000 or whatever. Yeah. And that he left the Braves because he didn't have a pension.
Yeah, that's true.
And he also said that John Quinn, also said John Quinn never made more than $20,000.
No, you know, it's true, Warren. I remember Bob Quinn.
I do, too.
And he told me the same thing, that just impossible. A lot of the front office people made very little money. The pension plans weren't any good.
Well, look at what we drew.
Yeah.
Look at what a scorecard cost in those days.
Yeah.
You know, like 25 cents or 15 cents.
The dirty little secret, Warren, is that today, in 2001, it's still true. The salaries in a lot of baseball are really not
very
attractive because most of the money's going to the players.
Yeah, I believe that. And whose fault is it?
Well, that's right. I mean, it's...
Well, heaven knows where baseball would be if the people who worked in baseball didn't love it, because they wouldn't work for those salaries. Well, but you were talking about, look what we drew and the scorecards and all. I wanted to ask you about Boston. Your career, you're thoroughly established now. Your career is going up, but you, at the same time, probably sense that the Boston Braves are not going to survive in Boston. How traumatic, if at all, was the fact that you were going to have to move franchise, lock, stock, and barrel? And
well, interesting story. I went to Lou Perini, and
Lou Perini was the owner of the Braves, right?
Yes. And I was getting ready to build a restaurant in Boston. And I asked him about the potential. There were rumors about the club moving. And I asked him what the percentages were that the club might leave. And he said, Warren, he said, a franchise hasn't moved in 100 years. And he says, we're steeped in Boston, and that's where we're going to stay. And I'm from Boston. Okay. The following year, we went to spring training. The Boston Braves went out as the Milwaukee Braves. But I think an interesting story about that, though, is that Lou Perini went to Notre Dame, and one of his close friends there was Fred Miller, the owner of the Miller Brewing Company. And Fred Miller wanted Perini to take the Braves to Milwaukee. And they had just built a new stadium, et cetera, et cetera. And to this day, I think if Fred Miller had lived, he died in the plane crash. I think if he had lived, the Braves would still be in Milwaukee and they'd be the Milwaukee Millers. But, you know, fate changes things so much. But at any rate, Fred Miller was a great person for Milwaukee. Lou Perini was loved in Boston. You know, so that when that change came about, we were very surprised. And the old, beat up, dilapidated Braves Field now became this brand new ballpark in Milwaukee. And then those people, the way they were, it was heaven sent that what a great place to play baseball.
Yeah.
And, you know, we drew like 40,000 every year. The last year we were in Boston, we drew 400,000 people. And the first year in Milwaukee, we drew 1,800,000. And I remember I was holding out, and I was talking to John Quinn about a raise. And he offered me a contract of my salary plus 10 cents on a ticket after 400,000. I'd have been the highest paid player in baseball had I accepted that.
Because of the move?
The attendance.
Yeah, because
cause,
of the move. Yeah. But then they'd have countered with that that was a different organization.
They would have welched.
Well, Milwaukee Braves, it wasn't the Boston Braves.
That's right. That would have been the argument.
Yeah, I know. So, hey, things turn out for the better anyway.
Do you consider yourself a Boston Brave or a Milwaukee Brave? Which city
are you more identified? Well, I spent more time in Milwaukee than Boston. However, it was still the Braves. And, you know, I have a lot of fond memories of Boston. I was married there. My son was born there. Farber, Dr. Farber, was a good friend of mine. You know, a lot of good memories in Boston. But I'm darn glad we went to Milwaukee, and I'm glad we won two pennants there, and I'm glad we beat the damn Yankees.
Well, let's talk about that. I think those are really very important highlights historically. Can we skip forward to 56, 57, 58?
Sure.
Talk about those two wonderful years and the relationship you had with Burdett. Henry Aaron comes. Now, that's the first really significant black player on your team. Talk to us about all of that.
It's well, let me go back to 52, if I may. You know, after we lost the World Series in 48, the Braves went through a mode of rebuilding the ball club. And until 52, we were horrible. But that was the year that Eddie Matthews came up. That was the year that the nucleus of that ball club that went to Milwaukee was established, and that was 52. Now, 53, we got Adcock, we had Billy Bruton, I think. And then Bobby Thompson broke his ankle in spring training that afforded Hank Aaron to be brought up to the big league. He was only 18 years old. And, you know, the great career he had. And so that ball club gelled, and it was from like 53 to 57 when we finally won the pennant and beat the damn Dodgers. And, you know, we were always in contention.
And you were always up against the Yankees because they were powerhouses in those years, too. So.
Well, that was the other league, but I'm talking about our league.
Yeah, but I mean in the World Series when
Oh, yeah, we played the Yankees in 57, and it was, I always felt the World Series was a series that you played the Yankees.
Mm-hmm. And, they thought
Cleveland,
so, too.
Cleveland, okay, that was a World Series, but it wasn't like playing the Yankees in the World Series. And then we beat them in 57. We beat them, well, Burdett pitched a great ball game in the seventh game of the World Series. And then in 58, we had the Yankees beat 3-1.
Yeah, they went home. And
we blew it. We stopped hitting. And I think the worst part of that was the fact that our wives enjoyed the winner's cut of the World Series in 57. And then we had to take the loser's share in 58. And they had all that World Series money spent before we lost the series. So it was double jeopardy. And, you know, two great ball clubs played 14 games and each won 7. So I don't think that there was any differential as who was who better than who.
It's time to change the oil again.
Yep.